Hey everyone, I'm Andrea Ferretti and this is Yoga Land. Today, my guest is Jason Crandall. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Andrea.
How are you?
I'm great.
Good.
Yeah.
How is the injuries training going?
We're creating a lot of injuries. You know, it's like a referral service because what I'm going to do is what I'm trying to do is get referrals to local doctors.
Great.
Based on injuries, get 10% mention.
Oh,
and then like, accident injury lawyers. I got a whole network.
Oh, it's a racket.
It's a racket.
Oh my gosh. So you refer people and then you get a kickback.
Yeah. But you have to use Jason Crandall Athletic Greens code, 20% off. No, the training's going really, really well. One of the things that I did, actually, one of the things I do, you know this, is I'm pretty obsessive about not letting things just stay as is. Like, I kind of always have to build some improvements because there's always a way to make things a little bit better. And I've wanted to add a little bit more practice to this training.
Right.
And so I just released, so every month we have a new 30-minute practice based on supporting some region of the body. And this month, I added a practice on strong and long quads. I never want to be reductionist, but it's virtually impossible to have healthy, happy knees if your quadriceps are not flexible and strong.
Mm-hmm.
If the quadriceps are tight and weak or tight and weak, it's really difficult to have happy knees. So I'm really excited about it.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I like that you added the practice component too. I think it's really smart to just taking all that information and then use your body with the information.
Yeah.
That's right. That's like why most of us are drawn to yoga. So it's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great application. Okay. Today we are going to talk about some of the questions about injuries that have been coming up behind the scenes, like in the membership, in the course. And I feel really lucky because I'm having some knee pain and there are some knee pain questions. So can we start there?
Definitely.
Okay. So the first one is one that is really familiar to me, although it's not the origin of my this is not all about me, you guys. It's not the origin of my knee pain right now. But the first one is having inner knee pain while in Urdhva Dhanurasana, so wheel pose, or Dhanurasana, so where you're on your belly, grabbing your feet.
I think one thing that's important to just take a quick step back from is anytime you have knee pain, or literally anytime you don't have pain and then you do a pose and you have pain in that pose, right? So it's not walking around knee pain. It's, I'm doing this pose and I'm having pain. Then one of the things we want to remember is we don't have a knee problem. We have the way our knee is doing the pose problem.
Right.
Right. The other thing to kind of step back and get a little bit meta on is that if a student is struggling with knee pain or literally anything, but like in this example, knee pain in upward bow and bow, I want to see if that same student has knee pain in a similar but easier pose. I want to see if they have pain in bridge pose.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason being is that it's obviously easier to learn how to manage a pose that's easier to do.
Right.
So we always, and it's one of the reasons I approach all of the injury management content as looking at families of poses so we can see like, Urdhva Dhanurasana, Viparita Dandasana, bridge, Dhanurasana, dancer's pose. These all have the exact same demand profiles in the knee. So what's the easiest one of these that we can solve for?
Mm-hmm.
And then let's apply that to everything else. So knee pain in bow,
mm-hmm,
and knee pain in Urdhva Dhanurasana. The first thing I would do is say, is there also knee pain in bridge?
Mm-hmm.
And if there is, deal with it in bridge. For all of these poses, you probably need, in most circumstances, to do one of four things or some combination of these four things. You need to open up the angle of knee flexion, meaning the knee needs to be less flexed.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you would do that in upward bow, Urdhva Dhanurasana, is you'd step the feet a little bit further forward. Like that would be the minimum thing that you would do. And a lot of times when you just take the feet further forward in a pose like wheel, you transmit less stress to the medial part of the knee. It's a little bit more absorbed elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is you cannot also do this in bow pose and face down because your hands are holding your feet. And so you just can't decrease the amount of flexion in that pose nearly as easily. You can use a belt, but
it's kind of awkward.
It's so awkward, right? But that's like the lowest hanging fruit is increase the length, the distance of the foot to the sitting bones. The next thing that you can do, which you can do in both of these poses, is take the feet wider. And this is something we've talked about so many times.
So you would start by saying, walk your feet forward. How does that feel?
Exactly.
And if they say, oh, it feels better, then you stop there.
Yeah.
But if they say it's still there.
Yeah. And even like, well, I'll take another step back, which is I think the question to ask your students when you're trying to help them troubleshoot a pose is, does this feel better, worse, or the same?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you just say, does this feel better, or does this feel good, or how does that feel?
Yeah, it's kind of vague.
Well, it's kind of vague, but also some of us are just people pleasers, right? And so, yeah, I think that feels better.
Right.
It's almost like, it's especially in certain regions or with certain cultures, like when a teacher is trying to help the student just wants, yeah, I think that's better.
Totally.
But if you say better, worse, or the same, that's a very easy question to answer for everyone. So the next thing that we could do is take the feet wider. And I will say this, I've said this so many times on this podcast and in my trainings, having the feet hip width apart is just made up. You don't need to have the feet just hip width apart. There's not a mechanical reason to do it. Taking the feet wide does not, cannot, will not compress the lower back or the sacrum. There's not a mechanism by which that would even happen. There's other things secondarily that can compress the lower back or the sacrum, but it's not taking the feet wider.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take your feet as wide as the mat. Taking the feet wider than the mat starts to be awkward. You can do that even in Dhanurasana, right? So a lot of times people in Dhanurasana, they're told by their teacher, no, the thighs have to be parallel, hug the thighs in. And I would say, if feet parallel and hip width apart in these two poses fit your body really nicely, great. That's great. But if there's pain in the knee, take them wider. And in bow pose, when you're holding your feet, you can't decrease the angle of flexion because you're holding the feet, but you can take the knees wider.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So this is a really good solution or management for both of these.
Okay.
Right? The third thing that you can do is a combination of those things plus a little external rotation in the femur. Meaning, so I'll say it again. Not only do the feet not have to be parallel or the thighs have to be parallel, they certainly don't have to be internally rotated. You can, but again, there's not a really great mechanical rationale for this. There's actually a little bit better mechanical rationale for some slight external rotation.
Mm.
So, and I would just say, like, that's the way other movement is usually taught, and it's certainly the way physical therapists will have people do things.
Mm.
Like, I've said this so many times, if you went into a PT's office with a knee issue and they had you stand and you stood with your feet hip width apart and the outer edge of the feet parallel, they'd be like, well, here's a problem.
See, it's funny because when I went into the yoga room, I had still a little bit of leftover turnout from ballet.
It's because who are the yoga teachers of a generation?
I know,
but it's just— broken-hearted ballet teachers.
No, I just really— No. It was all Iyengar teachers that were strict with me.
Okay.
And I'm okay. I'm okay saying that. People can cancel me.
No, of course.
My point is, I literally felt like something was wrong with me and had to unlearn things for so long. And
This question could bury us, but let's take it one. Let's go into this a little bit more. You are bow-legged.
Right.
I am bow-legged.
Yeah.
And when we're bow-legged, our knees turn in.
Yes.
Okay. So if our feet are parallel, yeah, our knees really are going to turn in even more.
Right.
And that's going to create an imbalanced torsion in the knee.
Right.
So actually there was this Tom Myers article in Yoga Journal a long time ago about feet, and it was made so much sense. And it's like, how the feet are positioned doesn't matter.
How did I miss that one?
I don't know. It was after your time.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
How the feet are positioned doesn't really matter. It's how the knees are positioned that matters in terms of the knees. Mm-hmm. And so for people with differently shaped knees or hip joints or all of the above, like you and I, put your feet wherever you want to put your bleeping feet so that your knees are comfortable. Mm-hmm. That, like, literally that is the only plausible. One of the things I want to help is people that want to listen, and I think there's a lot, it's like, just be more common sense about things, mm-hmm. right? And positioning your feet in such a way that's arbitrary, that does not work for your knee, makes no sense. And I don't care who said it in 1910, 20, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, I don't care. Having the feet in a position where the feet are in an arbitrary alignment that the physical therapy world would be like, well, that's weird, right? And the knee doesn't, and the knee hurts, that makes no sense. Mm-hmm. So feet forward, feet wide, feet slightly turned out. Mm-hmm. Because for a lot of people, that is going to organize and align the knee in such a way that there isn't torque. Mm-hmm. Now, if you don't need those things, it's very easy. Understand, as a teacher, it's much easier to teach black and white than it is to teach gray area. So it's much easier to be like, nope, feet are hip width apart, outer edge of the feet are parallel, and you're squeezing the thighs in. Because if you say those things, those are not wrong for everyone. Those are right for most people. But when the knees aren't working, that doesn't work. So mm-hmm. further forward, wider, turn slightly out.
I want to just give a quick acknowledgement to Judith Lassiter, who is a PT,
yeah.
and who long ago started saying, bring the feet wider, bring the thigh bones wider.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
She's been doing that for a long time.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Literally doesn't make sense not to, especially if you understand a little bit about how the psoas works and how the quads work. Mm-hmm. But when you take those feet a little bit wider, it allows that anterior thigh and hip musculature a greater opportunity to lengthen. The final option in this, in Urdhva Dhanurasana and bridge, which is not an option in bow, is to actually put the feet on blocks.
Right.
And the challenge with this is this requires, like, anytime you introduce a tool, you have to know how to use the tool. So this can be a little bit precarious. Like, this you need like a little bit more guidance and insight sometimes. But when you elevate the feet, you decrease the amount of weight and stress that's being transmitted through the knee. More of that load gets. Think about that. Okay, I think this will work for everyone. If you think about a seesaw, right, or a teeter totter.
Yep.
Where is the weight? The weight is in whatever is the lower part.
The down part.
The down part. Mm-hmm. So if you're in bridge and you have essentially two posts, the shoulder post and the foot post, if you take the foot post higher, it's dumping more, a greater percentage of the total load into the shoulder post.
Right. Interesting. Right? Yeah.
So this can work really nicely.
Okay.
One of those will almost always work.
Okay. I'm going to move on to the wrists.
Yeah.
And there are some questions about wrist pain in Chaturanga and Plank.
You've known me for a long time, and you've known that I've had a lot of injuries in my body. Those injuries have come from many different places. I mean, there's few things in my lifespan that I've not hurt. My wrists have never hurt. Mm, wow. And so I want to make an acknowledgement that thinking and learning a little bit about wrist pain for me has been in a way harder. And I don't pay as much attention to it because it's not as much my lived experience. So I forget, but it's really, really common. And it's also really common for those of us that do vinyasa-based yoga, mm-hmm. any kind of flow yoga. We need to be more able to withstand this. If I was teaching restorative or yin or more hot yoga, my ability, my need to troubleshoot these challenges would be much lower because the risk just isn't loaded in the same way. So I think the main thing that we want to understand about the wrist is, unlike the foot and ankle, the hand and the wrist don't have the equivalent of a heel bone. And in the foot and ankle, you have a heel bone, which is just the calcaneus. It's this big, blocky bone. It's actually not blocky, but it's like a keystone, right? And you transmit a lot of your body weight down straight through it. So it's able to offset. The wrist doesn't have that. And so when we are putting weight load into the hands and wrists, there isn't like a thing that just takes the weight. Because there isn't a thing that takes the weight, any number of factors, especially existing weakness or repetitive stress injuries that have some inflammation, can irritate the wrist when it's at that 90 degrees of extension. So this is common, and I think the two simplest ways to communicate about this is, number one, you want to either change, and right now we're not talking about the correctives, right? We're not talking about like, what do we do in general with the quads and the hip flexors to fix the knees? We're saying like, how do we fix the pose? Same thing with the wrists. Right now we're not talking about like, well, what do we need to do with the arms and the shoulders and the forearms to fix the wrists? No, we're saying like, how do we fix the pose? Okay. So that the wrists are not, right? We're troubleshooting the execution of the pose. We're not performing physical therapy.
Okay.
Right? Because that requires a diagnosis and like an actual professional workup. So bottom line on this, you want to do one of two things when the wrists are problematic in these poses, which is you want to decrease the total amount of weight being transmitted through them. Or number two, you want to change the angle of extension. You want to require your wrists not to extend at 90 degrees, right? That like fully bent back position, like if you're in plank. You want to be able to change that to like more of like an 80 or a 70 or a 60 degree. So you have to change the angle that the stress is being transmitted through the wrist. Or you want to change the amount of stress being transmitted through the wrist. The way that you would do the first, change the amount of weight in the wrist, is put your hands on blocks. Because it's that same thing of putting the feet on blocks, right? When you put the hands on blocks, you push, I don't know what percent, but you push now a greater percent of weight into the feet and legs. Mm-hmm. And that's whether you're in plank, down dog, and even chaturanga. And chaturanga on blocks is actually really nice. Mm-hmm. It's like using like a push-up, those like push-up bars. You don't bring the chest all the way to the floor in that situation, but that would be another story. So the mechanism of that, like I said, is that just shifts the weight load out of the upper body and into the lower body. One detail about this is, instead of just randomly putting hands on blocks, actually, this won't work for everyone because not everyone's hands are large enough, but if you turn your hands out a little bit, most people have hands that are large enough, or many people have hands that are large enough that you can kind of wrap the hands around the sides of the block a little bit, like wrap the fingers around the side. So it's like I'm gripping the block.
Oh, that's nice.
So the nice thing about this is you have the elevation, but you also have the stability of gripping the block, and you have the increased grip strength of gripping the block. Because a challenge for forearm and wrist strength in yoga is we only have open-handed positions. There's nothing that we are gripping. Like we're in plank, down dog, chaturanga, we have all these things, but our hands fully open, our fingers are fully open. There's no closed grip. Unlike if you're holding resistance cables or doing pull-ups or like you've been doing like building up hanging. Grip strength with hanging, right? Like because we don't have something to hold on to like that in yoga, we probably have a certain amount of lagging skill.
Right.
So having a little bit of grip there is nice. Elevating the heel of the hand is also pretty straightforward and simple. Changing the angle of extension. What you would do is, in this situation, you take an extra folded yoga mat or a yoga wedge, and you can get that on Amazon, right?
I was going to ask you if you...
I'd say get it at your local bookstore and support your local bookstore, but they don't sell them, right? So wherever you need to get a wedge, get a wedge. And in this, you elevate just the heel of the hand. I just did last week a yoga teacher's companion on five ways of dealing with wrist pain. Mm-hmm. Jason Crandall Yoga YouTube, go to it. It's going to lay these answers out and more. But I think if you get these two concepts of elevating the hand, improving grip strength, and offloading weight by putting hands on blocks, it's fine. Worst case scenario, you can make fists. Some teachers are like, oh, you can't make a fist. You can totally make a fist. It's just awkward.
Or you could do things on your forearms, but then you're not getting...
You can be on your forearms. Mm-hmm. You can be on your knuckles, but both are awkward.
Right.
Sometimes it's necessary.
Yes.
But I think those other two solutions are much better.
Okay. Okay. Moving on to hamstring attachment pain. So this would be pain at the very lowest part of the, where the butt meets the upper thigh.
Yeah.
If you've had it, you know. So I probably didn't have to describe that, but.
Can I go once again on record and say that I don't like the phrase yoga butt?
Sure.
I bring this up because, you know, people talk about yoga butt all the time, okay? It's not that I dislike it because I don't think yoga should be accountable for, you know, certain issues, but it patently lacks clarity. There are two different and very different common challenges that people have in yoga from doing a ton of a particular, I don't want to say a particular way of yoga, but an excessive amount of hamstring and outer hip stretching with an insufficient amount of hamstring and outer hip strengthening can be contributors to two different unpleasant buttock scenarios. Number one is what you brought up, which is hamstring attachment issues. And that's at the, I'll just, I don't mean to be crass here on a thing, but it's like at the very bottom of the butt cheek.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
I know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It
you just went
weird.
Through that whole thing just to come back to saying what I just said.
No, I know, but okay. I didn't actually.
Okay.
So pain at the bottom of the butt cheek. But there's another one, which is pain in the center of the butt cheek.
Okay.
And those are different.
I've never had that.
That's a piriformis issue.
Oh, okay.
Right? Or most likely to be a piriformis issue. So the two things that in yoga, an excessive amount of stretching hamstrings and outer hips with an insufficient amount of strengthening can be contributors to two separate things that are really unpleasant that affect the same area. But you're asking about hamstring attachment, which is much more onerous. The biggest issue that we have to do is as a community or people that are interested, is we have to nip this in the bud. We got to nip this in the butt. We have to have much more functional sequencing considerations to mitigate the potential of overstretched hamstrings in the first place. As a community, like, it would be impossible to not know that this is a relatively common yoga-based injury, and it doesn't happen out of the blue. It happens because the hamstrings are overstretched and understrengthened. In a real way, you want to think about hamstring attachment injuries as a repetitive stress issue.
Yeah.
Much more than a one day I just went too far, unless some knucklehead yoga teacher pushed you too far in a forward bend, right? So what do we do to mitigate them? We have to focus much more on concentric hamstring and glute strengthening, which means this: contract your hamstrings and glutes every possible time in yoga you have the opportunity to, which is every time the leg goes behind you. Like when you are taking a leg back behind you, so locust, bow, or like every back bend you do, Nathrajasana, Warrior Three, all like anytime a hip is going to into extension, squeeze the buttock, squeeze the hamstrings. Make those strong to offset or to complement all of the hamstring lengthening, right? Now, let's say you have a hamstring attachment injury. If I ask you, how long have you had it? What do you think the average, like the average answer is? Yes.
Yeah. It does not go away.
It does go away. But it goes away reluctantly. Mm-hmm. And it goes away almost invariably. And I hate to say this because we have a child and that child rides horses. And because that child rides horses, we need to keep generating revenue. One of the best things you need to do is not come to my yoga class. You need to not come to my yoga class. You need not come to my flow class. You need not do all these forward bends. And bending the knees in forward bends is probably going to make it worse. Mm. So bending the knees in your standing forward folds is not going to make the, and is unlikely to make a hamstring attachment issue better.
Once it's there.
Once it's there.
Right.
Because it's actually going to put more stress on the hamstring attachment.
Yeah.
So if you are telling people, like, with just with all due respect, like we all learn and grow, and there's been plenty of things that I've said at one phase of my career that I've learned better, right? But if you're telling students or a teacher is telling you to bend your knees to deal with a hamstring pain, that's probably not good advice. If it helps, it helps. You know what I mean? But when you bend the knees, you actually get more anterior pelvic tilt, which puts more pull on the hamstring attachment. So typically what you need to do is significantly for probably 2 to 4 months, reduce the amount of hamstring stretching and significantly work the isometric and concentric strengthening of the hamstring. And the moment it starts to feel better, do not come back to my class. I'll still be here in 4 months, God willing. I'll still be here in five months.
Come back to your class?
I would say come back after you are completely asymptomatic for weeks.
Yeah.
Because it's just too easy to redo. It's too easy to like re-trigger that tendinopathy. And I'd say the other thing is the things that you've mentioned so far, wrist issues, down dog plank, chaturanga, knee issues in these particular back bends. Like I said earlier, those aren't necessarily injuries. You're not necessarily walking around with that stuff. You're experiencing that stuff when you're in those poses. Hamstring attachment injuries, you're walking around with.
Yeah.
And we need to improve the quality of life instead of just the quality of Paschimottanasana.
Yeah. So I want to just add a little bit to this because I am a recovered hamstring attachment pain person. And so I will just add that this is a common injury for people who actually have really deep forward bends to begin with. And so I think what needs to also be addressed and maybe could be, you know, addressed as yoga teachers is forward bending. The purpose of forward bending is not to slam the front of your body against your thighs. In other words, like perhaps reframing this, like I had a drive. My forward bends were so deep to begin with, and I had a drive to make them the most beautiful, deep jackknife, you know.
And they were. They are.
Yeah. God damn it. But you know, at a pretty poor expense. So I think the other part that I suffered from, and I would hope that this is happening a lot less now, 20 years later, but, you know, at the time, there was a lot of poor cueing. There was a lot of lift the sitting bones in your forward bends. So if you are very flexible and you're deep in a forward bend and you lift those sitting bones even more and you pull yourself even deeper, that's a recipe for disaster. But if someone had just said to me, you know, you have really deep
forward bends. Nowhere else to go.
There's nowhere else to go. And
breathe.
It's okay if you don't feel anything. Like that, Natasha Rosopoulos and I talked about this. I did not feel my forward bends until I was 40. Once I turned 40, I started to feel like, oh, my hamstrings are a little tight today. Now I feel them. Okay. So it's hard for someone like me in that at that time of my life and in that body to not actually feel anything. Am I not doing anything? I felt like I wasn't doing anything. So yeah, just cueing, like, if you're not feeling a deep stretch and you're already there, you know, breathe.
Yeah. I think too, the obsession on lengthening the spine and getting straighter it's another mechanical thing that doesn't make sense, mm-hmm. right? It's like when you do a back bend, you're not trying to straighten your spine.
Right.
I'm not sure why people are obsessed in forward bends with the spines being straight. Actually, I am, but it's not.
I think it was visual, right? I think it's aesthetic. It's 100%
aesthetic.
Yeah.
And the reality is, if you have really tight hamstrings and in your seated forward fold, you can't reach the foot and you it's hard to get the pelvis 90 degrees to the thighs, you really should focus on straightening and lengthening the spine for sure. Mm-hmm. But if your pelvis is at more than a 90 degree angle of forward tilt over the femurs, it lengthen the spine and allow it to round in a little bit, soften, breathe, let the spine
actually
flex.
Feel more of a stretch along the
yeah,
back of
and
the body.
I think last thing, and I just feel like I mean you can attest to the reality that sometimes I'm a buzzkill. Man, just don't have people push on you in these poses. It's just
that's not a buzzkill.
It's
that's very wise.
Listen, we've done this. This has been so long. We're going 30 years here. People get trashed from this. It's insane that communities and cultures still do it.
Like, I had a teacher like basically fight back with me once at a yoga journal conference.
Who the wanted ego is to, just insane.
He wanted a student to, like, while I was in seated forward bend, to do Bakasana on my back.
That's so stupid.
And I said no, and I held my ground. And he made fun of me, and it was like a joke to him. And he was just thought it was ridiculous. And I was so glad,
yeah,
because I had so many years of injuries, and of course, never went to his class again.
And you're tiny.
That's a form of manipulation and control that nobody needs.
And if you do that kind of work in acrobatics or gymnastics or like contact improv, well, fine. But to think that that's somehow going to improve the quality of life or lead to transcendent realization is just, anyways.
Anyway, okay. Last area of the body is the sacrum, which is, this is a tricky one.
We've left 6 minutes.
You said
our producers,
you could do
it. Our producers are getting stricter.
You said you could do it. That's right. They are. Sacral pain in forward bends and twists.
Oh, man. Get a hammer. And if that doesn't work, get a sledgehammer. If that doesn't work, get a stick of dynamite. Okay, so it's hard for me to not like give a bunch of context and whatever. So let's deal with the scenario in which the sacroiliac joint probably has the greatest amount of localized stress in yoga. Forward bends and twists. The reason is that the way that the joint sits, the way the sacrum and the ilium articulate in a forward fold and in a twist, there's just a greater tensile stress that's put on that articulation than in other positions. That doesn't mean that people don't feel discomfort in the SI from time to time and back bends or lunges or another really common place is like transitions. Like one little moment forward folding in to a standing forward bend in Surya Namaskar or one little moment coming up from Surya Namaskar, there's like one angle or like, oh, there's a little tweak. The easiest thing to address is twists. And let's say I'm in Parshva Utkatasana. What is that in Sanskrit? In not Sanskrit. Revolved chair. Twisted chair. Yeah, I don't know.
I have like a blank out moment.
Yeah, anyway.
I could see the pose, but
You didn't know I was going to throw that on you.
My mind literally
especially,
was like.
I said it in Sanskrit, and then I said, what is it in Sanskrit?
I saw little clouds and birds in my brain.
Yeah. I actually like clouds and birds more than I like pervert or partial.
Yeah, anyways, that's true.
Let's say you're twisting to the right. Let's say the right side of the sacroiliac joint hurts when you're twisting to the right in any twist, including that twist. I bet if you don't keep your knees together, but I bet if you let your opposite knee, your left knee, go a little forward and your right knee go back. So what you're doing in this is, imagine again, I'm turning to my right, so my left elbow is to the outside of my right knee. If I keep my pelvis square or fixed and I keep my knees square or fixed, then all of the rotation that is being produced in that rotation to the right is spinal. But by rotating my spine and not rotating my pelvis with the spine, we have to remember the spine anchors into the sacrum. And so if I'm just turning the spine, the tensile stress or the torque of that rotation can easily be transmitted to that sacroiliac joint. If I allow my hips to turn to the right as I twist to the right, so now I'm in that same pose, but I'm not keeping my pelvis fixed or square. I'm not keeping my knees together. I'm allowing my hips to kind of make a, I'm not pushing my hips off to the right. I'm pulling my right hip back. I'm letting my hips twist.
Yeah.
Yeah?
You're like, yeah.
I probably have zero SI joint issue. Same thing in revolve triangle pose. If you don't let your pelvis rotate a little bit in the direction that your spine is rotating, way more likely to irritate the SI. Mm-hmm. If you're in something like Marichalasana C or Ardha Mardasana and you don't let the pelvis kind of go with you, or if you don't kind of like cheat. If I'm going to turn to the right in a seated twist, I want to start, if I have an SI joint issue, by kind of pulling that buttock back and the opposite buttock forward. So I turn my pelvis a little to the right as I turn my spine to the right. And what this will tend to do is offload stress from the sacroiliac joint, because now the spine and the pelvis are more cohesive in their motion, which means there's less likely to be antagonism where they meet. Mm-hmm. Right? So this is an old school Judith Lasseter thing. Speaking of PT, let the pelvis go with the twist.
Yeah.
Let the SI go with the twist.
And this is a similar situation to the hamstring attachment injury, correct? In that it can nag and last for quite a while.
These can nag and last.
And if you are in the middle of a flare up, you would not want to do these poses that.
Well, the only reason I would do them with all of these things, you always let your symptoms dictate behaviors, right? This was actually some of the most important things that I've learned from the sports medicine doctors that I've worked with over the years. In a way, they know so much and they give so much guidance, and then they say, but listen to your body. Let your symptoms dictate the behavior. Mm-hmm. So if I was in a flare-up and a twist was in any way irritating, no, don't do it. But if the twist is done in such a way where it's completely asymptomatic, yeah, why not? Mm-hmm. The final thing is forward bends. And I would just say to I don't think I can do forward bends justice. But what I would say is typically the advice that I just gave on hamstring attachment issues, not just spine longer, spine longer, spine longer, let there be a little bit of rounding. We might have to reconsider that if the issue is an SI joint issue. Because if I let the spine go into more forward flexion, more rounding, it might pull on the SI a little bit more. Hmm. So I might have to be with an SI issue in forward bends. I might have to try to search for more neutral.
Yeah.
And
I would do a lot of halfway forward bends when I was in the midst of it.
More upright. Mm-hmm. And I would also want to do it with the hamstrings engaged. Mm-hmm. So I'm pressing the heel into the ground and I'm pressing the back of the thigh into the ground. Mm-hmm. I want a little bit more engagement and I want less range. Mm-hmm. Asymmetrical forward folds, I'm always told and I tell, are more likely to be problematic than symmetrical ones, But when I, it's been a long time, God, thank God, since I've had an SI joint issue. But when I have had SI joint issues, all the forward bends felt equally awful. But I have tighter forward bends.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think more natural curve, less range, more engaged technique. And in the long run, there's so many things we can do to help us not have SI joint issues, right? We need strong piriformis. We need strong glutes. We need strong hamstrings. We need strong core. We need strong lats, strong thoracolumbar fascia. All of those things should be absolute number one priorities to minimize the potential, especially if you're someone that likes to go far and stretch a lot. And when you were listening to that part of me saying, don't let people push you into poses, you're like, yeah, but I like to. If you like all those things, God, please be strengthening that stuff really, really consistently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks so much, Jason.
42 minutes.
Okay. Good job. You get a gold star.
I'll take it.
All right. I just wanted to remind everyone that we will be at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts, April 28th for the Yoga Reaches Out event. We hope to see you there. You can get information on that event at www.yogareachesout.org. You can also, if you can't make it, you can donate to our team. And you can just go to that same page, scroll to the middle, type Yogaland in the search bar, and donate. All the money goes to help children who are ill and at Boston Children's Hospital. What else? I will put...
I'm teaching in San Francisco.
Oh, okay. You are teaching in San Francisco.
The end of March. So go to lovestoryyoga.com, get a spot. End of March.
It's a Saturday night. It's March 30th.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be there.
Love ya. Mean it.
Bye.
Until next week, enjoy your practice.